Well, earlier this week, actor Marlon Brando met with Jewish leaders to apologize for comments he made on Larry King Live. Among them, that, quote, Hollywood is run by Jews. The Jewish leaders accepted the actor's apology and announced that Brando is now free to work again.
I denounce anti-Semitism in all its forms. And I stand with my friends in the Jewish community. And that, Kanye, is how you buy yourself some time. He said, I can say anti-Semitic things, and Adidas can't drop me. Now what? Adidas dropped that nigga immediately. Ironically, Adidas was founded by Nazis. And they were offended. I guess the student surpassed the teacher. It's a big deal. He had broken the show business rules. It's just a rule. You know, the rules of perception. If they're black, then it's a gang. If they're Italian, it's a mob. But if they're Jewish, it's a coincidence, and he should never speak about it. Well, I've been to Hollywood. No one's y'all to get mad at me. I'm just telling you, I've been to Hollywood. This is just what I saw. It's a lot of Jews. Like a lot. I could see if you had some kind of issue. You know what I mean? You might go out to Hollywood and your mind might start connecting some kind of lines and you could maybe adopt the delusion that the Jews run show business. It's not a crazy thing to think, but it's a crazy thing to say out loud in a climate like this.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Dr. E. Michael Jones back on the show. Of course, Dr. Jones is the editor of Culture Wars magazine, the author of many books, including the just published The Dangers of Beauty, The Conflict Between Mimesis and Concupiscence in the Fine Arts. Dr. Jones returns to discuss, well, we can talk about the just this past elections that are not even over yet. Some of the disputes and scandals. And this, of course, Kanye West, Chappelle, this sort of the war that Kanye West declared on Judea, or Judea declared war on Kanye, I don't know how you want to look at that, ongoing, this sort of this a second crack up of the Black Jewish Alliance that was reassembled in 2016, courtesy of George Soros, and some of the scandals at the Justice Department, sort of this overreach, or as you call it, the Jewish law enforcement, courtesy of Merrick Garland. So, Dr. Jones, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, Jim. Good to be here.
Oh, thanks for coming back on the show. So, we're looking at the elections. There was a slight victory in the House. Well, I guess they took the majority. The Republicans took the majority, but they failed to take the Senate. And, of course, we had some of the same problems we had in 2020 are reoccurring in 2022 in some of the same states like Arizona. There's been reports of ballot dumps in Michigan, oddities occurring. I think what's the name? My Pillow guy he had a chart showing what he calls Viagra spikes on the elections. It's just, you have these ballot dumps and spikes for people. So again, accusations of voter fraud. Of course, this is a problem that's inherent with mail-in voting, which is sort of ripe for ballot harvesting and fraud that the Democrats benefit from. So what's your take on it?
Well, it's an issue that still has not been resolved. We still have this same state of uncertainty about the legitimacy of these elections in the same states. So I think basically the one explanation is that the Democratic Party has conceded large sections of the country to the Republicans, but they're determined to control certain swing states so that they can have a kind of razor thin majority to do what they need to do. I think that's the best explanation of what's going on here, because the problems always recur in the same states. They're all swing states. There's no question of ballot fraud in Indiana. The Democrats have simply conceded Indiana to the Republican column, and it's not going to change. But when you come to places like Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, you have the same problem. And it's compounded by the fact that you want to talk about this later, but I'll jump in on it right now. These are also problems of states that have Jewish law enforcement. Specifically, Michigan, with Dana Nessel, the Jewish lesbian, who's the attorney general there. If someone like this is in power, you can never be sure of the election. You can never be sure whether it's a valid election or not. That's across the board in this country. Beyond that, okay, let's put that aside for now. I'm saying that in a crucial state like Pennsylvania, what happened is that the Catholic vote is the swing vote in places like Pennsylvania. George Marlin wrote a book about this. He said the Catholic vote is always the swing vote, but he didn't really articulate what had happened to the Catholic vote. And that is what I witnessed as a teenager when I was in the going to a Catholic boys high school outside of Philadelphia, in the suburbs of Philadelphia, surrounded by girls' academies, which were run by orders of nuns, which over the course of the 60s and 70s all converted to a new religion called feminism. I bumped into it seriously when I came to St. Mary's College at Notre Dame. The Holy Cross nuns had all become feminists. And once you become feminist, once the nuns become feminist, the girls that they teach become involved in sexual liberation. And if they do that, they oftentimes become pregnant. And if they become pregnant, they oftentimes have abortions. And once a Catholic woman has an abortion and refuses to repent, she becomes a Jew. And what do I mean? How do I know that? Well, because she votes like a Jew, because the Jews have mobilized this group of people. It's called the Democratic Party. And one of the main constituencies there is women who have had abortions, who refuse to repent and are going to make wrong right. I think that's what happened in Pennsylvania. I think it's what happened in Michigan. Pennsylvania, you had a man running for governor, Josh Shapiro, who bragged about how he had taken on the Catholic Church. There aren't enough Jews anywhere to get anybody elected. The Jews always have to have some other group to be part of a coalition to get them elected. So obviously the biggest group in this regard was the Black Jewish Alliance that started early on, 1909, with the founding of the NAACP, Black Jewish Alliance got new wind in the sails after the lynching of Leo Frank with the founding of the ADL. And the Jews have used Blacks as their proxy warriors up to this point. But in Pennsylvania, it was the Catholic women who were the swing vote. That was the same thing, I believe, in Michigan. As a matter of fact, guy I know who actually was one of the people who helped put Dana Nessel in office there, told me that it was women, suburban women. I that's too broad a generalization. It's women who have had abortions. This is one of the crucial constituencies of the Democratic Party. And if they can mobilize these people in swing states, they will control the Senate. They didn't control the House this time, but it's only a matter of time. It's always going to be this razor-thin majority, which is indicative of the fact that the two parties are not all that different, and there's no real choice in the matter. So the other issue with the election was that the Republicans felt they could win by just showing up. Someone once said 90% of life is showing up. Well, the Republicans feel that way. They felt this way in the election. They did not imagine, what did they stand for? I can't think of anything. The crucial foreign policy issue is the war in the Ukraine, and there is no difference whatsoever between the Democrats and the Republicans on the war in the Ukraine, with maybe a few notable exceptions, maybe, I don't know, Rand Paul, who knows. But this is part of the problem here. You've got a situation just like 2020, where the voter woke up and realized that you have two parties that represent oligarchic interest and no party that represents the people of the United States or America.
Yeah, I can say the Republican Party may be able to win despite the demographic changes that have been imposed upon the country. They may be able to win despite electoral fraud, ballot fraud with mail-in voting. They may be able to win despite not offering a valid alternative, a real alternative to their Democratic Party, but they can't win with all of the above in play.
The exception here was Youngkin in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
The incumbent governor, I forget, McAuliffe, I think was his name.
He wasn't the incumbent, he was the return governor. Virginia, the governor runs for one term, and he can't have more than one consecutive term in Virginia. Okay. So McAuliffe was the one that predated Northam. So that's how it worked. So he was coming back to be governor. Yeah.
All right. So,
but effectively, he'd been elected one time before.
Right.
Yeah.
So he was caught announcing that parents should have nothing to say about what goes on in the schools. How stupid. The Republicans jumped on it. It was a classic culture wars campaign. Merrick Garland had demonized mothers who wanted to have something to say about the books that were taught in schools. And they were Garland demonized them as domestic terrorists. It was the perfect storm. How can you lose when you have idiots like this shooting their mouth off in the Democratic Party? So Youngkin won, but he did take a kind of culture wars position.
Mm-hmm.
The other side, Mastriano took a strong position. I don't know. I've already told you what I think about Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. And from what I understand is the Republican establishment didn't want Mastriano to win anyway, so he didn't get much help from what I understand. So.
That's right. That's part of the problem here, the Republican establishment. And Trump was the savior. Where have I heard this story before? He saves the party and then they crucify him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the tragedy of American politics at this moment.
Yeah, it's almost like Mitch McConnell, you know, the octogenarian Republican leader in the House. I looked at the results of the election. I said, well, I guess Republicans weren't excited to return Mitch McConnell as majority leader, you know, in the House and the Senate rather. He'd rather be, I guess, in control of a rump party, a minority party in the Senate than the majority party. Because in order to get the majority, he would have to accept a lot of these candidates like Blake Masters in Arizona that would have upset some things and how they have things set up in Washington, D.C.
The classic problem of the Republican Party, and Phyllis Schlafly articulated,
mm-hmm.
They'd rather lose than accept a leader who has some principle. So Bob Dole got the nomination. What was that, 92?
96, yeah.
96 got the nomination. Well, he was there to take the fall. His job was to root out all the Buchanan supporters and expel them from the Republican Party. So he was like Wendell Willkie. You know, he was nominated to lose. Phyllis Schlafly nailed that in her book. And they've never gotten beyond this. The Republicans.
Yeah, and it shows you just how important the culture wars in sort of electoral politics. When you talk about sexual liberation and abortion, where people can be they internalize the commands of their oppressors and they become psychologically unable to rationally deal or even morally deal with some of these issues. And so, so they become Jews, which meant they become, as you call, you said, it's a Jewish revolutionary spirit. So it transcends ethnicity. If you you become Judaized in your outlook on things. And that's part of what the culture wars and the sexual revolution was all about, people embracing this way of life and these outlooks, and this is going to affect how you live your life. And the good example, if you look at how it was broken down with the election, one thing is you can look at, like, I think 66% of all people who own a firearm voted for the Republicans. 58%, I'm sorry, yeah, 58% of the white vote went Republican. Of the 73% of people who voted in this election were white or called white, and then 58% voted Republican, and it was 52% of married women. I think well over 60% of married men voted. So if you live what do you call a well-ordered moral lifestyle, you're more likely to vote, right wing or Republican. They identify, for better or for worse, Republican Party. They see it as representing them, at least in terms of national politics. So you can vote that way, but you can disrupt that by creating legions of guilt-ridden, confused, insane people, which is what, the Cultural Revolution has created in the past 50, 60 years in this country.
Right. You can, the two Jewish sacraments, abortion is the sacrament of initiation for women, and sodomy, or probably more so, pornography is a kind of a sacrament of initiation for the men.
Mm-hmm. And keep them from getting married, which is important to pornography, because you can't relate to a woman. And of course, women have trouble relating to men. And then if they don't get married, they don't have children, they're not going to have, you wrote about this, with, the deal that, you're poor, but we're sexy attitude of these things, where if you don't have a family and you don't have those responsibilities, you're not going to have the same concerns for posterity. And these things tend to make you more conservative and right wing and the way things work out. But if you corrupt them sexually, they just want to hang out in the gay disco, as you say. And they have no elite concerns for the future. And you can manipulate them with these issues like abortion, where they're more concerned about a theoretical right to kill their unborn child than they are about, being able to, afford food for their family, keep a roof over their head, or even walk outside without getting raped or mugged.
They've disrupted that important transition. The most important transition is in life is when you get married, because that's when you form your own family. And then you have a position in society, and you have a commitment to the future when you start having children. That has all been disrupted by Jewish psyops, largely sexual Jewish psyops, feminism, a Jewish psyop, pornography, another Jewish psyop, abortion, another Jewish psyop. They have disrupted this healthy culture. And replaced it with a culture of wounded people who can't relate to the opposite sex, who don't then get married, don't reproduce. And that, of course, the weaker the majority gets, the stronger the Jew gets, because he's always in a minority.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works. And it's been effective. It's been effective.
Yeah, you had Chuckie Schumer, I guess the still the majority leader in the Senate, talking about the importance of mass immigration, legal and illegal, because for some reason or another, the native population just isn't reproducing at the same level it was in recent generations. Gee, I wonder why that is, Chucky.
Yeah, did your people have anything to do with this, Chucky?
Mm-hmm. It might be the demoralization of society through your control of entertainment and pop culture. And speaking of that, we had this thing the past few weeks with Kanye West, right? This a golem that went out of control, because I've described a lot of these entertainers and sports figures like Kyrie Irving. These are creations of Jews. These are golems, and they get out. Apparently, they've gotten free of their chains, and they've, especially Kanye West, who started talking about his experience with Jews and entertainment, and then he finds himself canceled despite being a one-time billionaire.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that Dave Chappelle's monologue was brilliant, because Dave Chappelle understands the prime symbol for the black entertainer, and it's a gold chain. It's like chains. That's what you put on slaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are gold chains. You're still a slave, but we're going to treat you really well as a slave. And it was brilliant. And so he talks about Kanye West, you know, shows up at this concert with all these rappers, and they're all out decked out in their gold chains. And Kanye West says, you know, that's only for millionaires. I'm a billionaire and I don't need to wear my money on my body. And at that point, he lost. He crossed the Jews who were at the other end of the chain, and he lost $1.5 billion within a 24-hour period.
Yeah, it was the Reverend Farrakhan who said the man lost over almost $2 billion in 2 days. And you have to ask yourself, if it's so easy to lose it, did he ever own it? You know,
the whole point. That's the whole point of the chain. Yeah. You know, someone yanked his chain. But so he comes back to that at the end when I'm talking about Dave Chappelle. Now, he comes back to that at the end when he says, put on your chain, nigga. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. So he's like admitting him back. But the price of admission back to the billionaires club is you have to wear a gold chain and you have to do what you're told. And that means you never say, though, put those two words together that he said. You've never put the and Jews together. So, you can see their control. They're the invisible hand here in this universe. And they'll give you a lot of money if you do what they tell you and make money for them.
Yeah, that was interesting. Did you see the Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert interview?
I saw a little bit of it. I kept waiting for Stewart to say, get serious. Maybe I missed him, but he was just kind of trying to walk down both sides of the street at the same time. That was my impression of it.
Yeah. He said he's making the mockery of the idea that Jews have any like disproportionate or inordinate control. And his point was, he makes his joke was saying, I just wait for the day when we have a Christian president.
Yeah, I saw
that. As if presidents and prime ministers and congressmen are the pinnacle of power in our society. There isn't power behind the scenes. George Soros or who's some of the other Jewish oligarchs, Larry Fink,
the Republican Party, Sheldon Adelson.
It's like, so have you heard of Bernard Baruch or Samuel Untermeyer or
John, we're not that dumb. I know we're team, but we're not that dumb, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always the vizier, never the caliph. It's always the man behind the scenes, the man, the money man behind the curtain who controls the man in front. We're smart enough to figure that one out. But so I thought that was kind of juvenile on the part of Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he just would admit something honestly about Jewish control, but he didn't. He's got to maintain that same fiction himself.
Well, one thing that struck me is with, with Chappelle, I mean, he did that monologue, the reaction is just so, well, one thing it's neurotic, over the top, hysterical, and also solipsistic, meaning they don't acknowledge anything on their part as being overreacted, doing anything wrong. And it just shows that their incapacity for introspection on these things and the presumption of entitlement. It might speak to the fact that this generation hasn't had any adversity, whereas previous generation Jews had to deal with some opposition and adversity. So they had to be a little more clever, like Abe Foxman. And it looks like Jonathan Greenblatt really is so entitled. He's not used to dealing with it. And so he's so over the top, which is why, was that tablet called for ADL being disbanded?
Good article in the tablet saying the ADL has to go. Because that fault line was always there.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned in my article, Norman Podhoretz. So 1963 is the high watermark of the civil rights movement. And you got Jews and, blacks marching arm in arm in Washington. Abraham Heschel marching with Martin Luther King. And but the other Jews, the little Jews, are the ones who pay the price because they're in Brooklyn and they're the ones that get beat up by the blacks. And this is precisely what Norman Podhoretz said in his essay. Came out in 1963, the same year, and basically launched neoconservatism as the little Jews, who were not going to be invited to the big black Jewish alliance banquet. And that had its day. I mean, they were rewarded. Tadaris and his wife, Midge Decker, were rewarded by being inducted into the Republican Party. And then they behaved badly once that happened as well. I'm just doing a piece right now. Father Hesburgh, famous Father Hesburgh, said, once you let the Jews in, they take over. God bless Father Hesburgh for saying that.
That's the liberal Father Hesburgh.
Same liberal Father Hesburgh.
Who marched with Martin Luther King. Or he's more...
Yeah, that's the iconic photo of Notre Dame University is Hesburgh and Martin Luther King singing We Shall Overcome. But he did say that, and he should know because he's the one who brought the Jews into Notre Dame. He hired the first Jew, who was, I knew well, a guy by the name of Sam Shapiro in the history department, who lives around the corner, used to show up at my house periodically and get into big, we'd always have these, you know, discussions, arguments. He spent his entire life trying to convert me to Darwinism, and I spent my entire life at that time trying to convert him to Catholicism, and neither of us succeeded.
Well, he could turn you into a spiritual Jew by embracing Darwinism. That was his tactic, I guess.
It was nothing. That was his religion.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It had nothing to do with Jews, but I mean, that was his religion. But he told me that he had been blacklisted because he'd gone to Cuba. He was a communist, would go into Cuba, got thrown in jail in Cuba because he couldn't even get along with the communists down there. And then was blacklisted when he came back, and Hesburgh picked him up. Sam was grateful, but he's nervous. He shows up here. He feels he's got to give a speech to the history department. So they take him out to dinner. They all get drunk. And he said, well, can I give my speech now? Nah, you're not going to give a speech. The fix is in. We have to hire you. Hesburgh said, we have to hire you. Why was that? Well, he didn't even get his bags unpacked. They turned him around, sent him to the Ford Foundation. They asked for money.
So he was there to get money from the Ford. He was a rainmaker for the Ford Foundation.
Like, hey, I'm a Jew from Notre Dame, so give me money.
And now Notre Dame's sponsoring what, critical race theory and transgender stuff?
Oh, that, it's a disaster now.
Yeah.
Everything bad. So the classic example now at Notre Dame is this dean, Father Olinger, gives a video talk to every incoming freshman saying, basically, in order to be a good Catholic, you have to support sodomy. We already knew that, Father, but also transgenderism. Now, wait a minute. Let me just ask you a question, Father. Suppose some troubled 18-year-old guy comes to you in the confessional and says, I may look like a guy, but I'm thinking, I'm really a girl, and I'm thinking of transitioning. What are you going to tell him? Go for it? Hormones? Mutilation? This is outrageous. Or maybe the priest in him will kick in and he'll say, forget all that bullshit I said in the video. Don't you dare do that. You're a guy. You know, either
yeah.
way, he's either a hypocrite or a monster. Take your pick.
Yeah, neither is good.
Classic Notre Dame right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one thing struck me with the Chappelle thing is the reaction. It was where a couple of tweets by Jonathan Greenblatt. He said one thing he says, you know, listening to Chappelle caused him and other Jews to experience trauma. I mean, they don't acknowledge the reason why people are laughing at the jokes is because the jokes reflected a lot of truth. That's why it's funny. And again, the inability to look at their own situation, their own privileged situation, and go, well, this is funny. People are laughing because it's true. Nevertheless, he has to play the victim. Everyone knows, I don't think it's sincere. I think it's just opportunistic. But he also said this other tweet. And this is this, I mean, do these people really live in reality? He says, it's time for the Jewish community to take a seat at the table, to use our power as institutional investors to ensure corporations are aligned with our values and don't fall for the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel pressures. That's why we're bringing, under ADL's, or I guess an organization under ADL's umbrella, but it's time. Like, you haven't been doing it for more than a century in this country. It's time. Everyone knows you've been doing this. And now the answer is, he says, to don't fall for anti-Semitic tricks against anti-Israel pressure. So are you a foreign agent for a foreign government? Are you lobbying for a foreign government? Is that the job of the ADL? I didn't know that. Well, I knew that, but you know. But
yeah, it gets worse. It gets worse. So for his initial reaction to the Chappelle speech was just kind of whiny, like, why are you making fun of it? Well, because you overplayed your hand, Jonathan. Dave Chappelle turned anti-Semitism into a joke because of you overplaying your hand. But it keeps getting worse. So today, I just got it before the show came on. Greenblatt tweets, well, we Blacks and Jews, we were passengers on the same ship, you know, sailing against the winds of hate. You go to the comment, and he says, yeah, we were passengers on the same ship. You were on the deck with the Jewish slaveholder. We were all on below the deck, you know, packed in like slaves. So the whole thing just blew up in his face. Once again, he's apparently has reached the point where he can't open his mouth without sticking his foot in it.
Yeah, this sort of this trouble with the rappers, uppity rappers, is that it disrupts the Jewish narrative in their you know, Black Jewish Alliance, where they want to portray themselves along with Blacks as victims, perennial right. victims, right? And so this upsets everything. You know, so they find it very hard to manage because they look really bad when they have to like overtly censor and shut down and shut down these artists who are speaking up, you know. And again, the inability to maybe acknowledge that maybe their business practices and the way they treated these people might call for some sort of a reevaluation or something. But again, they're always the victims, and any criticism, any kickback, any feedback negative is anti-Semitism, which by definition, if not de jure illegal, de facto illegal, and requires censorship. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, this is Greenblatt. Greenblatt is totally tone deaf when it comes to any type of dealing with other people. He is totally immersed in this Jewish victimhood narrative, and he's making himself more and more obnoxious every time he speaks. And now he's single-handedly alienated the group that made up the most powerful revolutionary movement in American history, the Blacks, the Black Jewish Alliance. He just blew up something that was incredibly successful as late as Black Lives Matter. In many ways, that was, I mean, you could say the civil rights movement was the high point, but if I compared this to the light bulb that, you know, the right before it burns out, there's this brilliant flash, you know, gets mm-hmm. really bright. That's exactly what Black Lives Matter was. And the staging guy, one of the main supporters of Black Lives Matter was the NBA, the basketball players. And he single-handedly blew that up by attacking Kyrie Irving. We used to say Kyrie.
Yeah.
At mass, but that was a Catholic mispronunciation of the word, I think. So anyway, Kyrie, he attacked Kyrie Kyrie didn't say anything. He just recommended a movie that was on Amazon. And, you know, Greenblatt goes DEFCON 3, to use Kanye's term, against why did you do that, John? Is there anybody in there that can calm Greenblatt down? Is there anybody who can say, you know, hold on, Jonathan, take a deep breath, okay? Count to 10 before you go DEFCON 3 on Kyrie for tweeting something about a movie. Apparently, there's no control there. Greenblatt can just, he's got that Twitter account. You know, take his Twitter away from him, okay? I can see there's got to be some adult Jew somewhere who can go into the room and say, Jonathan, we're taking away your Twitter account.
You're
bad, Jonathan, between one Jew to another, you're bad for the Jews. This is exactly what Lyle Leibovitz said in that tabloid.
Mm-hmm.
He's causing the very anti-Semitism he's complaining about, and he's blind to what he's doing.
Well, it's so overt now. A good example is John Stewart went with Colbert. He said, well, I don't agree with this, the way it's been handled, meaning the shutting people down for the criticism. But what he's admitting is that people were shut down. People were censored, which is admitting that there is Jewish power. So they're admitting their dominance by coming down on someone. He's making Kanye West and other people's points when they do this. And the very power that ruins you is not supposed to exist. That doesn't, you know, it's an admission right there.
What Greenblatt did was so stupid, that attack on Kyrie, that there must be a reason. And I think the reason is that Kanye made some really damaging revelations when he tweeted that stuff about his personal trainer, Harley Pasternak, says, if you don't do what I say, you'll be in zombie land, and I'm going to have you institutionalized, and you'll never see your children again, or something like play dates won't be the same anymore, something like that. That was really damaging, really damaging. And the more you looked into Harley Pasternak, it turns out, what is a personal trainer? It's basically, he has contacts with the Canadian Psychological Warfare Operation and access to drugs that are so powerful, they're not on the market. And this is what he's threatening to shoot into Kanye West. This is really bad. And on top of that, you start to have memories of, wait a minute, what were personal trainers called in the 1950s? I think they were called psychiatrists. And then I remember the story of Marilyn Monroe's psychiatrist, Mr. Greenson, who was fond of shooting her up with drugs after he had sex with her. And she tried to break with the guy, and he's not going to let her out of his clutches. And I think there's evidence that he killed her. Jonathan, you brought all this up. Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing all this up, bringing all this material out. This is really stupid. Jonathan, I hope Jonathan Greenblatt stays at the ADL forever. He's going to ride that puppy into oblivion if he keeps going the way he's going. And the trouble is that the Jews can't seem to get his hands off the steering wheel.
Well, that's one method by which I think they control something like Hollywood. One thing is, not just the media and what's produced and making sure the material, but it's also the literal sort of the mind control of the various celebrities that the machine creates. And we see that with the various celebrities, and that this guy, Harley Pasternak, would mean that, the trainer, but they keep them all drugged up and everything and controlled. And something as important as a celebrity, because you've always wondered, celebrities have the capacity to have incredible influence. So that would have to be under some control. And that's how I think Hollywood, I think it was Black Cube is like this private intelligence operation that's run by former Israeli intelligence agents. They go out and harass, and they do the work of influential Jews, perhaps to keep things under the lid and harass witnesses and these things. And we got some hint of that, with the sex scandals with Harvey Weinstein, right?
Yeah.
Black Cube was harassing witnesses, and that might be one method by which they do that. And then, so Kyrie Irving was a distraction. Let's create a diversion.
I think so. I think it was so insignificant. Why would you do something that stupid? Wreck a propaganda operation like the NBA? That was really stupid. So now we know that 70% of the players are Black and 60% of the owners are Jewish. And if the Jew doesn't like the way what you say, he'll fire you no matter how many points you score.
Mm-hmm.
Back playing again?
He was under suspension. I'm not sure. I don't follow the NBA. Didn't he offer a $500,000 donation that they initially accepted and rejected? Yeah, I think he has to go to the Holocaust Museum or something.
So this is opening a huge form of social control. Like, did you know, by the way, that every single FBI agent has to go to the Holocaust Museum?
I've heard that from a couple of people. I think they also have to pay for the ticket or something.
Yeah. Well, I heard from someone in the FBI, so that's for sure that has to happen. And that allows us to segue into the topic of Jewish law enforcement.
Yes, Merrick Garland at the Department of Justice he's turned the FBI into sort of a Americanized form of the Cheka, where he's going after harassing pro-life protesters. I think many as three, two of which had very large families, but they were Mark Hawk, who apparently had the temerity to prevented an old Jew from barking obscenities into his son's face out in front of an abortion clinic. And I said, getting arrested for preventing a Jew from shouting obscenities in your kid's face is a metaphor for the country now.
Yeah, exactly right. So this is law enforcement now. This guy, the FBI shows up, 25 agents with drawn guns show up at this guy's house in Bucks County, drag him out in his underwear and handcuff him and take him off to jail. Mm-hmm. Of his wife and 5 traumatized children. Oh, wait a minute, Merrick. I mean, what's he going to have? Plausible deniability? It was Christopher Wray who did it. He's the head of the FBI. Well, it turns out Christopher Wray just gave a speech to the ADL. Oh, no. And he's talking about how we're happy to have the FBI partner with the ADL to fight hate. Well, what about Mark Houck in Pennsylvania? This is more proof that abortion is the Jewish sacrament and Mark committed blasphemy. And this is what you can expect now in Pennsylvania. All you Catholics out there, you got a Jewish governor and you got a Jewish attorney general in the United States. And they are both rabidly pro-abortion, and they're going to politicize law enforcement and go after people because they're pro-life.
Yeah, people don't. I've tried to make the point that everyone being harassed are Christian or Catholic, and you have a Jewish attorney general. And the report is that the FBI isn't even the Justice Department isn't even waiting for reports. They're scouring the country for these incident reports of altercations outside abortion clinics, which you always get with protests. You always get these altercations, which local authorities don't even prosecute. But he's using it as a pretext to enforce this law that Chuck Schumer sponsored in the 1990s. This freedom of access abortion clinic, I forget, it's called the FACE Act or something.
Freedom and access to clinic.
Something like, yeah. And it's explicitly does not involve personal altercations. It's there for when there's an organized prevent access. So it's a clear violation of the law. It's abuse of power. And this isn't surprising. Just recently, you can watch it. Ted Cruz was grilling Attorney General Garland regarding his harassment of parents who were protesting critical race theory and transgender stuff at schools in Loudoun County last year. That letter that it turns out the Justice Department had solicited from the American Association of School Board. So again, it's creating a pretext. And he asked him directly, you know, that isn't a conflict of interest that your son-in-law and daughter work for a company, it's called Panorama, I think, that makes millions of dollars providing curriculum or material for critical race theory programs. It's a conflict of interest. And he was, he was squirming in his seat. I don't know if we'll come to anything politically. And of course, Ted Cruz did not asked, you know, didn't bring up the ethnic question here. There, you know, the fact he's Jewish and harassing, going after Christians and these things. And, but nevertheless, it was fun to watch.
Well, the just to show you how bad it is, that abortion clinic, I think, was in Philadelphia. Larry Krasner is the DA in Philadelphia. He's been impeached by the legislature of the state of Pennsylvania for not enforcing the law. This is more Jewish law enforcement. Mm-hmm. He's a Soros prosecutor, got elected with Soros money. But even he wouldn't pursue charges against Hal.
No. Now, has he accused the Pennsylvania legislature of being anti-Semitic yet?
It's coming. It's coming. Oh, this is, wait a minute. You've cried Wolfowitz one too many times.
So. As you see, Jimmy Raskin, another one, he's a congressman from Maryland. He said that we have to fight Russia, the Ukraine, because Russia isn't feminist enough. They don't have gay rights or transgendered rights in Russia. And yep. Apparently it's a Christian country. That's the problem for Mr. Raskin, the congressman Raskin, is that it's culturally a Christian country. In fact, I think it is still. It's officially a Christian country. It's a Christian state.
Oh, that's always been the bone in their craw. That's why Jacob Schiff gave a lot of money to Trotsky to overthrow the czar and the Christian monarchy in Russia. Well, now it's back, and the Jews are still trying. They're still annoyed, and now it's war with Russia to overthrow this Christian monarchy that has the temerity to not a Christian monarchy anymore, to overthrow the Orthodox Church, which is the official state religion of Russia, because it has the temerity to defend the interest of the Russian people.
Yeah, now was it the U.S. soccer team in Qatar is flying the rainbow flag in Qatar? That's apparently, that's what represents the United States now. So it is, it's the gay disco export.
I didn't make this up. I was in Berlin and I show up at the U.S. Embassy. It's brand new. The last time I've been there was during the Cold War in the 70s, where there was a wall down the middle of the city. So now it's all these new buildings. There's the American Embassy. There's the Berlin Bear, the symbol of Berlin. And it's got a rainbow flag draped around it. And then the next to it is an explanation of what this means, which is basically that the official position of the U.S. Government is to support the homosexuals who died at the Pulse Disco in Orlando. Well, that's where, oh, so it's the gay disco. So then I said, one of my shows, are you willing to die for the gay disco? And somebody captured that and turned me into a rap singer, you know, with this.
Well, it's never too late. Maybe you get a Jewish agent.
Put your cane on, nigga.
Yeah, there's a, that's, Kristen, we have this lady shooting in Colorado, which is now is being used as a pretext to condemn critics of people who are grooming children. Apparently, this actually was a grooming operation. They offered all age friendly brunches at this transgender LGBTQ bar. And now, I guess we're supposed to acquire the fact that allegedly someone went in and shot up some people. But that's supposed to mean that it's because people are critical of LGBTQ grooming children and these things. That's the function of these, you know, these events, at least how they're treated in the media. It was the front page of the Washington Post. You know. Meanwhile, I think last week 300 people died of fentanyl overdoses in this country. So,
yeah.
That they don't seem to raise as much concern, or you know, no one draws a conclusion from like Daryl Brooks' driving over white people in Waukesha, and they don't blame Black Lives Matter for that or anything like that. It never cuts the other, it never goes both ways on this stuff.
But this is wearing thin, and their claims ring increasingly hollow, largely because of what we're doing right now. This is a powerful effect on the changing the narrative. I've also been on a number of shows with Gemma O'Doherty in Ireland, telling the Irish to go back to church, go to confession, go back to church. It's simple. It's not a big deal. You all have buyer's remorse now because you're all enslaved. You don't have any gold chains, but you're slaves anyway. And it's been having an effect. So how do we know it's been having an effect? Well, because Heidi Beirich issued a report accusing Gemma O'Doherty of promoting hate speech. Wait a minute, Heidi Beirich, that name sounds familiar. Oh, I remember. She was working for the Southern Poverty Law Center back in about 15 years ago when I was just writing the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit.
She's in Ireland now?
She's in Ireland now. And so the main problem that Gemma O'Doherty has is she speaks to E. Michael Jones on a regular basis. So I said, Gemma, this is proof that you're having an effect. You are number one on the list to get rid of. And it's not a joking matter, because the Irish have just passed probably the most draconian hate speech legislation in the world. And it goes into effect in December. And they have basically the right to come into your home and, you know, no warrant, just on the suspicion that you have a bad thought or maybe have said something, confiscate your computer, throw you in jail. I mean, is anything ever going to wake up the Irish to the fact that what I've been saying all along is that sexual liberation is a form of control? Are the Irish ever going to start? Do they see now that the velvet glove of sexual liberation is really disguising the iron fist of political, tyrannical political control? What more do they need?
Yeah, that's you heard that the priest got in trouble just for teaching church teachings on sexual morals, or didn't?
That's right. Criticized homosexuality.
Well, that, don't you expect to hear that in a Catholic homily? I mean, I'd expect to hear that. But again, yeah, now it's basically, they're making it illegal to be a Catholic in Ireland, which
we're heading in that direction right now. Notre Dame, classic example, it's going to be illegal to be Catholic at Notre Dame. So you start off, Hesburgh starts off, you know, alienates church property, but everything's going to be fine. You know, we'll be more Catholic than the Pope. No, it's not. It's not working out that way. There's a debate over there, college Republicans versus college Democrats. It comes to abortion. And the Republican starts talking about, it's taking a human life. And the Democrat at this point can't argue, can't put coherent sentences together. So you know what he says? I'm Jewish. Ha! I'm Jewish and you're being anti-Semitic because you're you want to restrict abortion, which is a fundamental Jewish value. Everything that I predicted came out of this kid's mouth at Notre Dame. And the Republican kid, who they kept referring to him, they wouldn't use his name because he's an Indian and he's darker than the Jew who looks like a white guy. So that's not playing well here. So we have to forget about that fact for a minute. But the Republican says, I didn't bring this up. You brought it up. You're the one who injected this religion into this. And then he says, it just goes on and on until finally the crowd at Notre Dame starts booing him. Well, he must have gone to school with Jonathan Greenblatt, I think. As a matter of fact, I think it's exactly what happened here. It's in the middle. He after the debate, he wrote an article in the student newspaper. And he started, you know, attacking all of these people, Christian fundamentalists. And he then mentioned my name in the article, E. Michael Jones. Well, I'm honored, Mr. Ziegler, that you mentioned my name. But where did you find, how did you make contact with me? Was it listening to Notre Dame students? Or were you prepped for this debate by the ADL? It sounds to me like it's all ADL talking points here. And that's supposed to be a substitute for reasoned debate and coherent sentences. And when it does, when it starts to not work, then you just announce, I'm Jewish. I'm Jewish and I have relatives who died in the Holocaust and therefore I win every debate. So then it comes out, their students come out, this committee starts supporting Ziegler and it's clear the direction they're heading. You will be banned from Notre Dame if you're pro-life. You will be censured by the administration. We know we are heading in this direction. It's a completely tyrannical society, a lot like Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. There's an incident in New Jersey. I saw this on Tucker Carlson's show last night. A comedian, Josh Denny, he's a pro-life comedian, and he's spoken up about it before, how he feels on the issue, what he thinks. But he had some show in this New Jersey town, Rutherford, New Jersey, and Antifa organized a campaign on Twitter of all platforms, and they threatened to riot, show up, and shut down the event. So the local authorities canceled the event, and they bragged about the fact that they canceled the event. Now, of course, this is illegal. This is tortious interference. You're depriving this man's ability. It wasn't a pro-life event. He's just a comedian who happens to be pro-life. But now they're organizing and shutting him down, silencing him, and which is illegal. This is, I think it's called hectoring, censorship, or hectoring veto. The Supreme Court has ruled unconstitutional. And those who organize this, at least can or should be held legally and criminally liable for this. Of course, the FBI, Maryland's FBI or Department of Justice and the FBI have no interest in investigating this. They're too busy going after, fathers of 10 who show up outside abortion clinics and do sidewalk counseling. But this is another way where they use Antifa, which is a proxy for the FBI, American Justice Department, to shut down free speech. Same way that they use intimidation, accusing people of being terrorists, or organizing groups like Unit 8200, being infiltrating all the high tech, the big tech companies that control Google, the Israelis, the Jews, they run Google, the Facebook and these things, or Twitter for that matter, up until recently. And they stifle everything. And we talk about election fraud and voting, but of course, a big part of elections is the flow of information, the media. And we do know for several years now, there has been a cabal, a conspiracy, if you will, to suppress information, whether it's the Hunter Biden laptop story, questions regarding COVID and the jab, any number of issues. The Department of Justice, there was a lawsuit, I think The Intercept ran a piece recently, exposing the coordination between Department of Homeland Security, FBI, DOJ, the Biden administration, to suppress information, which is a violation of the First Amendment and criminal, but they're suppressing all this information. Then we find out that more than 1,000 agents of Israel's infamous Unit 8200 have infiltrated all these tech companies. And this is a national security concern, but you can't question it, because if you do question it, you're an anti-Semite by their standards.
Yeah. Well, this is Jewish law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Things got to be done here. I think I proposed this before. Anybody with a dual citizenship should be barred from being in the government. That would be a first step in the right direction, but only a first step, because the people have to regain this country back from the Jews who have taken it over. How many more incidents do we have to have here before we're understanding that we are all being crushed under the boot of Jewish terrorists who make the Shekah look mild by comparison?
Did you, before I let you go tonight, get your thoughts on this FTX scandal and its ties to the Ukraine, the Democratic Party?
It's another Jew. Oh, no. Why did you bring this up? Why? You must be an anti-Semite. This is like makes Bernie Madoff look like nothing by comparison. It's a money laundering operation created by a Jew with connections to the Ukraine. So basically, the Biden administration sends money over to Zelensky. Then Zelensky passes the money on to this Jew, either FTX or what was there? They had an investment, Alameda.
Alameda, yeah.
Alameda is then going to invest it in a Ponzi scheme and then make a lot of money. And then, by the way, and we're going to skim off about $40 million and give it to the Democratic Party so that they don't prosecute us. Well, wait a minute. This is, how bad does it have to get here? You know, how bad does it have to get? Is Jewish law enforcement going to kick in when they have to prosecute one of their own? No, I don't see it happening. I'll be happy to recant when it happens, but I don't see it happening. It will be like Epstein's first deal. The guy in Florida got an award from the ADL because he gave Epstein a slap on the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
That's Jewish law enforcement.
Yeah, there was a meeting or some sort of program sponsored by the New York Times for November 30th, featuring Sam Bankman-Fried, Janet Yellen, Mark Zuckerberg, and some other Jew. And they're going to talk about finance or something. I don't know if it's been canceled yet, but then nevertheless, you have people all involved. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the other guy was Zelensky. Sam Bankman-Fried, Zelensky, Mark Zuckerberg, and Janet Yellen.
There are too many Jews here. Wait a minute.
Well, pattern recognition is anti-Semitism and is bigotry. But then again, it's like, wait, who's involved with the biggest fraud here? Is it Sam Bankman-Fried? Is it Zelensky in Ukraine and that operation? Is it Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook? Or is it Janet Yellen, who's in charge of the Treasury, which is U.S. bond market, which is the biggest fraud operation around, I think, right? I mean, because she comes from the Federal Reserve, too. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's something else.
The whole sanctions office is a Jewish operation that's run out of the Treasury Department.
That's right.
People all across the world.
That's right. And of course, Henry Morgenthau was at the Treasury Department, right?
Absolutely.
And that's kind of where the genesis, I believe, of the whole Holocaust narrative, because they controlled the refugee relocation program, right? Which the storage originally came out of, which morphed into the narrative that we know all too well now. Don't you have a? I know you've been serializing articles in Culture Wars regarding that issue. You have a book coming out on that soon?
I do.
And is that next year sometime, you think, or?
Next year, yeah.
Okay.
We're working, assembling it. You're making sure everything's okay.
But okay.
We've already serialized some of the articles in Culture Wars that you'll have a taste of what's to come in the book.
Yeah, I've read a few of them. It's a lot of, yeah. You cite the research, you know, of, what's that German chemist? What's his name?
Germar Rudolph,
yeah, in there.
Yeah.
And that doctor that, at Auschwitz, it was very interesting to me about him. The Angel of Auschwitz, that was a very interesting article. But
yeah, the inmates at Auschwitz pleaded with him not to leave because, and one of them did a drawing of him skewering a louse.
That's on the cover.
That's on the cover, that drawing.
Yeah.
An inmate at Auschwitz begging this guy, German doctor, not to leave because of all the work he's done, protecting them from disease by instituting measures of hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the Jews there praising him by doing this drawing of him spearing the louse, which everybody knew was the main source of death at Auschwitz at that time.
What was his name again?
Wirt.
Oh, no, the doctor.
Wirt?
Okay.
W-I-R-T-H-S.
Okay. Oh, Edward, right?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I pronounced it. Okay, yeah, that's German. You're doing the German. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't recognize it. It was Edward Wirt, right?
Wirt.
You doing? I don't speak German, so I'm not. So okay. Yeah, I encourage people to subscribe to Culture Wars and get those articles because a lot of information in there, and it of course it speaks to the issue we're talking about tonight, of course, because that narrative is very important. That's the power behind the accusation of anti-Semitism, because everything, any criticism leads is a prelude to a pogrom or another Holocaust.
That's right. The shelf life has expired. Thanks to Jonathan Greenblatt, it's going to go down much faster than otherwise would have happened.
Well, that's the price of chutzpah, isn't it?
I think it is. You don't know boundaries. The rejection of Logos has led you to feel that you can transgress any boundary and get away with it. And that's not going to work here.
Okay. Well, I said I have you for an hour, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Tim. It's always a pleasure.
It was a pleasure having you back on the show. That's Michael Jones, of course, the editor of Culture Wars magazine, culturewars.com, where you can go there and find the books, subscribe to the magazine, and go from there. And also, he now hosts a weekly program on Friday on TV, right?
We're now on Cozy.
Cozy TV, that's right. So your weekly program there. And of course, all your interviews, of course, you'll eventually link this interview there to the website there, culturewars.com. Right. Okay, well, listen, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Tim.
And we're headed in the holiday season, so I wish you a Merry Christmas. Of course, I suspect I might talk to you between now and the end of the year, so maybe we'll touch base in December.
Good.
See what comes up. Thanks so much. Good night, then. Bye-bye.